Welcome back to the programme. Now, my next guest was the head of special projects at the National Archive. She came to national attention in 1995 when she discovered files detailing how Irish babies were adopted to America in the 40s, 50s and 60s. This discovery led to a contact register for adopted children and birth parents being set up. She describes herself as a radio fanatic. So, of course, we asked her to select some of her memorable moments from the RTE Radio Archive. We're doing that this month. Archivist and broadcaster Katrina Crowe, good morning to you. You say you are a radio fanatic.
I am. Well, since I was a child, the radio was always on in the house I grew up in Dublin in the 1950s. And every time I hear the Elizabethan Serenade, which I'm sure everybody has forgotten except me, it was the theme music for the Castle Hosiery sponsored programme on a Tuesday morning at 8:30. They used to have all these sponsored programmes with quarter hour sort of slots. And that to me brings me straight back to having eaten porridge I didn't like, going out the door with scratchy socks knitted by my lovely grandmother who didn't believe in Angora or cashmere, and with mittens tied around my neck so I wouldn't lose them, in a big suitcase or
school bag
on my back, and going off to school in a state of misery. And I never actually heard the programme because I had to leave, but I still remember the theme music. And there's nothing as evocative as those things that were on all around you, and the theme music for the Kennedys of Castle Ross and the Walshans programme, and the man saying, if you must sing a song, do sing an Irish song. And of course Frankie, who one of your previous contributors had many things to say about. So it's always there, and it was of course a highly communal medium. Everybody listened to the radio then. Television arrives at a slightly, a slightly later stage. But we hear, and we still hear a lot of things for the first time on the radio.
Right. Is it true that there were 70 in your class at school?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, people forget, you know, how
they had
it was
to hit us before we started in case we'd start up anything. That's just terrible.
Now, your first one you picked today is Dev, President De Valera. And bring us back to the context and your own family situation.
Okay, well, this is at second hand. I don't want anyone to believe that I was alive in 1945, because I was not. I was born 7 years later, which isn't that long. But this came to me through my parents. My mother was a Cumann na Gael woman from County Monaghan, and my father a De Valera fanatic from County Clare. So as you can imagine, there were disagreements. But on one thing they agreed, and that was De Valera's response to Churchill in 1945 at the end of the war was a magnificent moment of national pride. And the context for that is the war ends. We have been neutral during the war. I used to believe myself for a long time that it was very wrong of us not to be engaged in the war against fascism. But when you delve into it and look at the reasons why neutrality was a good idea, it's only 16 years since the end of the Civil War, when World War II breaks out. The IRA has a bombing campaign in Britain during the beginning of World War II. 9 days before the outbreak of the war, 10 people are killed. Five people are killed in Coventry and 70 are injured. So there is massive stuff going on there. And that, by the way, was the glorious idea of a bicycle bomb left in the middle of a street. You know, we really need to look at our notions of how to prosecute political ideas. So there was still significant support for the IRA after the end of the Civil War. The Offences Against the State Act was introduced in 1939. The IRA had significant links with Nazi Germany. Sean Russell, who was the chief of staff, died in a U-boat off the coast of Clare in 1940. They had been over there negotiating with the Nazis for some aid and assistance to achieve a united Ireland. Going into the war on Britain's side could have incited serious violence here. It wasn't a great idea.
Now, so we have two clips from De Valera's response to Churchill. One is an earlier part of the speech, and then we'll come to the one that's probably most familiar. So let's listen to the earlier part of the speech, where Dev acknowledges how hard it was for Churchill to resist violating our neutrality.
It is indeed fortunate that Britain's necessity did not reach the point when Mr. Churchill would have acted. All credit to him that he successfully resisted the temptation, which I have no doubt many times assailed him. in his difficulties, and to which I freely admit many leaders might have easily succumbed. It is indeed hard for the strong to be just to the weak, but acting justly always has its rewards.
That was, when you hear it, really, I wasn't familiar with that bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But that line, hard for the strong to be just to the weak,
yeah.
But acting justly always has its rewards. And then I'll play the other section that the people will have heard already.
Mr. Churchill is proud of Britain's stand alone after France had fallen and before America entered the war. Could he not find it in his heart the generosity to acknowledge that there is a small nation that stood alone, not for 1 year or two, but for several hundred years against aggression, that endured spoliations, famines, massacres in endless succession, that was clubbed many times into insensibility, but at each time on returning consciousness took up the fight anew, a small nation that could never be got to accept defeat and has never surrendered her soul.
What your parents think of all that?
Well, you see, a lot depends on what Churchill actually said to Devon in the first place, which was very naughty. He decided to have a stab at him on the 13th of May, which is 5 days after he announces the end of World War II, except in Japan, of course, who,
yeah,
as we know, continued, yeah, to be dreadfully bombed by America. But he pronounces De Valera Mr. De Valera, which some people say meant a mixture of evil and era, the word for Ireland, and says, owing to the action of Mr. De Valera, so much at variance with the temper and instinct of thousands of Southern Irishmen who hastened to the battlefront to prove their ancient valour. This is true. 50,000
yes,
Irishmen,
yeah,
went to fight with the British forces. 5,000 people deserted from the Irish Army and joined the RAF and the Merchant Navy and got no thanks for it afterwards, as we know from our history. And he mentions basically that he would have, he says, we might have been forced to come to close quarters of Mr. De Valera or perish forever from the earth. This is high-flown rhetoric, which we're used to from Churchill, of course, who was one of the great orators. But Dev was no mean orator himself. And he decides he has to stand up to him. And in all of this, there's the long-standing idea of England as the old oppressor, Ireland, as expressed very well in that clip, this weak country that has been given a really hard time, but that never gave up, that continued to resist all of this time. So this is another moment of resistance. And he timed it brilliantly. De Valera was a really good PR man. Like, he was renowned for coming into a town with sods of blazing turf all around
him. So people could see
him. And making speeches, as Brandon O'Hare said, in bad Irish to mesmerise the population. So he knew how to do PR. So he responds, not the next day, but a few days later, on the 16th, 3 days later, on a Sunday night at 10 o'clock. And there are stories of people gathering wherever neighbours had a wireless, as it used to be called,
yeah,
at the time, to listen to this extraordinary moment, because they'd all heard Churchill's speech. And people everywhere, regardless of the bitterness of the Civil War divisions, all agreeing that this was a moment of great, yeah, response to the old enemy.
Your mummy and daddy agreed.
They did.
There you go.
They did.
Yeah, interesting. What can go across divides. Now, next one you're coming to is a very tough one.
Lavinia Kerwick.
Yeah.
Lavinia Kerwick is somebody that I hope is not forgotten at this point. But as time moves on, things that we remember are not necessarily known by the younger generation. Lavinia was the woman, she was 19 years old at the time, who was the first woman in Ireland, first person in Ireland, to abandon her anonymity after a rape case. And that was in 1992. She was raped in 1991, New Year's Eve, on the way home from a party by her then boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
It was a particularly savage rape. She had severe internal injuries to the extent that it was thought afterwards that she might never be able to have a child. Mercifully, she did. She regards that child as a miracle now. She went to court. She suffered gravely in the course of the trial. And the worst part of it was that at the end of it, her rapist was given a 9-year suspended sentence and effectively walked free. She heard Gerry Ryan saying on the radio the day after the verdict was announced, if that had been me, he wouldn't have walked free from my court, which is quite a dangerous thing to say on the radio, as you all are aware. She heard that and she thought, if I am going to say anything about this, he must be the man I will say it to because he sympathises. Rang in, said her name, really historic moment, and described what had happened to her. And within a few days, she is a major story.
Yeah, let's have a listen.
When you heard that this man was not to receive a custodial sentence, but was in fact to walk free, the justice adjourning sentence for 1 year, giving him a chance as a human being, as he describes himself, what was your reaction?
I had to be removed from the court because I just sat there and cried and I just kept on saying, I can't believe it, I can't believe it. And I got very, very upset. I just couldn't believe it. He might as well have raped me yesterday again. Because I just felt like after coming so far and being let down by the whole justice system, that I felt like I should never have reported it in the first place.
You can hear the tears in her voice, yeah. You know, and she really did have severe PTSD for a long time after that event. But what did this produce for us? Because of Lavinia's intervention, we now have victim impact statements, which we would not have had until much later, I think, without her very eloquent testimony. And we also have the capacity for the DPP to appeal sentences they believe to be too lenient or too harsh, which again, these innovations go right across the criminal justice system. They don't just apply
right.
to rape victims.
Yeah.
And to this day, she continues to campaign for help for victims of sexual
right.
assault and rape.
And the interesting thing is, I mean, you come back to it so many times. One does, you know, should you report a rape? Should you not report a rape? What are you letting yourself in for?
Yeah.
Her mother encouraged her to report it.
She did.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure whether her mother was sorry afterwards. I mean, all of us will remember Lavinia, and I'm not breaking any confidences, this was public knowledge, suffering from anorexia.
That's right.
And those terrible photographs of this beautiful girl, skin and bone, that went on for a long time. Her mother's heart must have been broken by all of that. But she is now 44 years old. She looks wonderful. She has her miracle child, as she says. And she was able to launch the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre's report last year, and to make a very campaigning speech about all the things we still need to do.
Right.
And just in that context, the Belfast trial that we will all remember from last year
mm-hmm.
alerted our Minister for Justice, Charlie Flanagan, to set up a review group to look at the needs of victims of rape and sexual assault in the criminal justice system.
Yep.
And we hope to have a report from them very soon. The Dublin Rape Crisis Centre has made a submission to that. That can be found online if anybody wants to see what they have to say.
OK. I mean, we should point out that everybody was acquitted in Belfast as it happened.
Yeah.
Now, so that was a brave moment and a good outcome, I guess. We're moving on now to Scrap Saturday. Away, lad. You decided to go for Charlie Hawley.
Well, how could you not? I mean, we all remember Charlie and Garrett. And for the young people, that was Charlie Hawley and Garrett Fitzgerald, who were the two warring prime ministers, Taoiseach, during the 1980s and early 1990s. And it was Dermot Morgan with his cohorts, Pauline McGlynn, Owen Rowe and Jerry Stembridge. He and Jerry Stembridge wrote the scripts. And Dermot said on a Late Late Show appearance that the reason he got on so well with Jerry Stembridge was that he was an evil bastard from Limerick. And that was the kind of thing he needed to keep him going. So everyone got it in the neck. And it was this half-hour programme of wonderful, vicious satire every Saturday morning where everyone got it. I don't think they ever attacked you, did they, Marion? Not
can't,
much.
Can't remember.
No, I'm sure they didn't. They wouldn't have the nerve. So Charlie and Garrett were the two big ones. Charlie, of course, in conjunction with PJ Mara, his press secretary, who was a far more sophisticated person than the way he was portrayed
yes,
in the programme. But they
absolutely.
Had to do a forelock tugging thing
yeah.
to make it sort of work. And we had Michael D before he was president. Some of these survived to be pilloried today by Oliver Callan, which is
yeah.
interesting. Michael Noonan is still around. Jerry Collins, Eamon Dunphy, Mary Robinson, Pádraig Flynn, the Flintstones, and Bertie Rubble. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Bertie come down to visit. And Fred Flynn Stone would shout at his poor wife, Wilma, come down off the roof and make sandwiches for Bertie. Absolute. This was all after the attack on Mary Robinson during the presidential campaign. Mike Murphy got slagged off, Gay Byrne. But Charlie and PJ were the main act.
Yeah.
And they were very, very funny. Absolutely irresistible.
This involves foreign travel, kind of.
Japan. Aye. These people have the right idea. Enthronement. A booming economy, great industrial output. Due to what? Strong leadership. An emperor. That's what this country needs. An emperor.
Yes, boss, but you see, boss, they believe the feckin' emperor is God.
What's wrong with that?
It's a different culture, boss. I mean, sure, you're not a nip after all.
Of course, it's not widely known, perhaps, that some of my ancestors actually came from Japan.
Well, here we go.
My great-great-grandfather was one of the seven samurai, while one distant cousin was a Shinto priest in an enclosed order. I myself used to spend my summers there as a boy.
You'd miss them, wouldn't you?
You really would. Yeah. You'd miss great. All of it. And Dermot Morgan died far too young.
He did,
such
yeah.
a loss to us.
Yeah.
He was hilarious. There was also an Italian Charlie who was related to the Medicis. And then there was a Charlie who was born in every single province in Ireland at the same time. I mean, the surreal aspects of this are brilliant.
Now, lastly, we come to the crash.
We do.
And Mr. Honohan, remind people, well, it's 10 years ago, but I guess some people don't remember it.
They probably don't. We have very short memories in this country, Marion, as we know. This is Patrick Honohan, our new governor of the Central Bank. On the 18th of November 2010, he came on Ortiz Morning Ireland to say that the IMF was going to give us a loan worth tens of billions. Now, the government had spent the previous days denying in every possible way that there was anything going on. We were grand. We were covered for the foreseeable future. We had the famous visual images, Noel Dempsey and Dermot Ahern shaking their heads with enormous innocence when asked, did they know anything about
well,
this?
Well, they didn't.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't, in fairness.
You know,
but
that's
they did
the point.
Look as if they did. And meanwhile, A.J. Chopra, who became a figure of love and affection in Ireland, is sitting in the Merrion Hotel engaging in negotiations. And he later, of course, said that we did really badly out of all this because of the ECB, who are far too hard on us. So it was a funny moment. It was, he was in Frankfurt at the time at a meeting of the governors of the European Central Bank, which, of course, he became one. He took it into his own hands to make this phone call. And it struck me at the time, this would never have happened with any previous governor of a central bank because they were all former secretaries of the Department of
Correct.
Finance.
Yeah.
They were insiders
steeped in
the and
culture.
There is still a culture of secrecy in the Irish public service. It's changing gradually, but it's still there. To have, and now Honohan also, of course, he was an academic economist who worked in Trinity and had taught in the SRI and worked there, but he had also worked for the IMF from the World Bank, so he knew his way around all of this. And to hear a public servant in a very senior position call up a radio station of his own initiative and just say, actually, the truth is as follows,
was
both refreshing and slightly frightening that he could do this.
Okay, anyway, let's have a listen.
The Taoiseach over the past couple of days has been remarkably reluctant to use the phrase bailout. Do you accept that that's what we're looking at here?
Well, normally, actually, we don't talk about bailouts. When you're talking about IMF, IMF provides loans, not bailouts. The loans get repaid. Shareholders in the IMF get the return, which are governments, get the return on the money they have advanced to the IMF.
Right, so are we
so
then talking about a loan?
It is a loan, yes.
And you can confirm that they will be giving us a loan?
Well, if it's agreed, of course, yes.
And when you say if it's agreed, I mean, why else would they be here?
Oh, exactly. I mean, the intention is and the expectation is on their part and personally on my part that that the negotiations or discussions will be effective and that a loan will be made available and drawn down as necessary.
It was astonishing, wasn't it?
It was absolutely astonishing.
Yeah. I mean, why we should all be astonished because a public service tells us the truth, is in itself remarkable.
And you see, he was coming from a position where he was in Europe. He was away from Dublin, where all of this secrecy was going on. And he was hearing from people that something had to be said and done about this, that they can't go on pretending it's not happening. So he decided, without consulting the government, that he would do it.
I'd say Brian Lenehan wasn't overly pleased.
He was, as Honan himself said later in one of the many banking inquiries, which seemed to go on for ever, he said, they were very cross. I didn't think they'd be as cross as they were, but they were very, very cross with me for doing this. But nonetheless, I couldn't see any other option at the time. So fair play to him. And it's an example that I suppose you don't want to encourage everyone to break ranks all the time and do something behind the government's back. But that was a classic example where the dogs in the streets knew that we were getting a bailout and nobody was telling us what was actually happening.
It was like when the regulator was on prime time, I think it was on prime time, saying banks were so well capitalised and not a bother. Actually, a lot of people found that really frightening because of the same dogs in the same streets.
That's right. Yeah. Those dogs should be on the radio more than they are.
Listen, thank you very, very much indeed for all that. Very interesting to go back over some of those memorable times. Katrina Crowe, thank you very, very much indeed. Thank you.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.